Chapter 113. Never growing old or changing, the good angel of the race abiding by them in all reverses, redeeming all their sins, and his daughter the mother lived again. You may judge with what devotion he who lost that mother almost in the winning, clung to this girl, her breathing image. She grew to womanhood, and gave her heart to one who could not know its worth. Well, her fond father could not see her pine and droop. He might be more deserving than he thought him. He surely might become so, with a wife like her. He joined their hands, and they were married. Through all the misery that followed this union, through all the cold neglect and undeserved reproach, through all the poverty he brought upon her, through all the struggles of their daily life, too mean and pitiful to tell, but dreadful to endure, she toiled on, in the deep devotion of her spirit, and in her better nature, as only women can. Her means and substance wasted, her father nearly beggared by her husband's hand, and the hourly witness, for they lived now under one roof, of her ill usage and unhappiness, she never, but for him, bewailed her fate. Patient, and upheld by strong affection to the last, she died a widow of some 3 weeks' date, leaving to her father's care two orphans, one a son of 10 or 12 years old, the other a girl such another infant child the same in helplessness, in age, in form, in feature as she had been herself, when her young mother died. The elder brother, grandfather to these two children, was now a broken man, crushed and borne down, less by the weight of years than by the heavy hand of sorrow. With the wreck of his possessions, he began to trade in pictures first, and then in curious ancient things. He had entertained a fondness for such matters from a boy, and the tastes he had cultivated were now to yield him an anxious and precarious subsistence. The boy grew like his father in mind and person, the girl so like her mother, that when the old man had her on his knee, and looked into her mild blue eyes, he felt as if awakening from a wretched dream, and his daughter were a little child again. The wayward boy soon spurned the shelter of his roof, and sought associates more congenial to his taste. The old man and the child dwelt alone together. It was then, when the love of two dead people who had been nearest and dearest to his heart, was all transferred to this slight creature, when her face, constantly before him, reminded him, from hour to hour, of the too early change he had seen in such another, of all the sufferings he had watched and known, and all his childhood undergone, when the young man's profligate and hardened course drained him of money as his father's had, and even sometimes occasioned them temporary privation and distress. It was then that there began to beset him, and to be ever in his mind, a gloomy dread of poverty and want. He had no thought for himself in this. His fear was for the child. It was a specter in his house, and haunted him night and day. The younger brother had been a traveler in many countries, and had made his pilgrimage through life alone. His voluntary banishment had been misconstrued, and he had borne, not without pain, reproach and slight for doing that which had wrung his heart, and cast a mournful shadow on his path. Apart from this, communication between him and the elder was difficult, and uncertain, and often failed. Still, it was not so wholly broken off, but that he learnt with long blanks and gaps between each interval of information all that I have told you now. Then, dreams of their young, happy life happy to him, though laden with pain and early care, visited his pillow yet oftener than before, and every night, a boy again, he was at his brother's side. With the utmost speed he could exert, he settled his affairs, converted into money all the goods he had, and, with honorable wealth enough for both, with open heart and hand, with limbs that trembled as they bore him on, with emotion such as men can hardly bear and live, arrived one evening at his brother's door. The narrator, whose voice had faltered lately, stopped. The rest, said Mr. Garland, pressing his hand after a pause, I know. Rejoined his friend, we may spare ourselves the sequel. You know the poor result of all my search. Even when by dint of such inquiries as the utmost vigilance and sagacity could set on foot, we found they had been seen with two poor traveling showmen and in time discovered the men themselves and in time, the actual place of their retreat. Even then, we were too late. Pray God, we are not too late again. We cannot be, said Mr. Garland. This time we must succeed. I have believed and hoped so, returned the other. I try to believe, and hope so still. But a heavy weight has fallen on my spirits, my good friend, and the sadness that gathers over me will yield to neither hope nor reason. That does not surprise me, said Mr. Garland. It is a natural consequence of the events you have recalled, of this dreary time and place, and above all, of this wild and dismal night. A dismal night, indeed. Hark! How the wind is howling! Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.